Lecture 30, Falstaff, Act 2, Scene 1, Conclusion, Scene 2.
We return to the life and operas of Verdi. This is Lecture 30, and it is entitled Falstaff, Act 2, Scene 1, Conclusion, and Scene 2. We return to the interview, the great duet, between Sir John Falstaff and one Master Fountain, who is, in reality, Alice's unhappy hubby, Master Ford, in disguise. Falstaff has just asked this Fountain what exactly he's supposed to do in exchange for the sack of coins he has just been handed, and Master Fountain has said, "Ve le dirò, I will tell you what I want you to do." And now, finally, he begins to get down to business. Mr. Ford, Master Fountain sings, "There's a very beautiful and charming lady here in Windsor by the name of Alice. She's the wife of someone named Ford." Oh, Falstaff is all ears. He says, "I'm all ears." Master Ford, Master Fountain continues. Verdi's setting here of Fountain's tale of frustration with its overblown statements and short, pathetic side comments is a masterpiece of comic timing. "I love her, but she doesn't love me. I write to her, but she doesn't answer. I look at her, but she doesn't look at me. I seek her out, and she hides. I have squandered treasures on her. I've given her gifts after gift, trembling. I've plotted and contrived to make her love me, but alas, it's all been in vain. I've been left out in the cold, unloved and empty-handed, cantando un madrigale, singing a madrigal." Now, by this last line, singing a madrigal, boito means literally singing the blues. And note how wonderfully Verdi extends the word madrigale, turning it into a weeping moan of grief and frustration in Ford's voice. Falstaff picks up on this, and together he and Ford do a male bonding thing as they sing a little impromptu madrigal back and forth about love denied. Together they sing, "Love, love that never gives us an even break until life is gone, gone. It's like the shadow that pursues a fleeing man, and when a man pursues it, it flees from him. Love, 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 love." Master Ford sings by himself, "And this madrigal I have learned at the cost of gold." Offering as much consolation as he can, not much really, Falstaff now sings, "This is the fatal destiny of a miserable lover." Ford pathetically begins to sing his lovelorn madrigal again. "Love, love, that never gives us a break." Okay, Falstaff has had enough. He cuts Ford Fountain off and, reflecting on his so recently received message from the delectable Alice, he asks, "She never gave you any encouragement?" To which Ford replies, "No." So Falstaff gets to the point, asking, "Bottom line, why are you telling me all of this?" "A good question, Sir John. Another 2 minutes and 20 seconds have gone by, and you still don't know what this Fountain guy wants you to do. You'll find out soon enough, but first, let us listen to this point of the duet from Mr. Ford's C'è a Windsor una dama. There's a very beautiful and charming lady here in Windsor.
C'è a Windsor una dama, bella e leggiadra molto, si chiama Alice, è moglie d'un certo Ford.
M'ascolto,
io l'amo, e lei non m'ama, le scrivo, non risponde. La guardo, non mi guarda, la cerco e si nasconde, per lei spreco i tesori, città i doni sudori, e scogi poi tremando il cuore delle occasioni. Ahimè, tutto fu vano. rimasi sulle scale, negletto a bocca asciutta, cantando un madrigale. L'amo, che non ci dà mai tregue, finché la vita strugge. Ecco, è l'ombra che chi fugge
l'insegue,
e chi risegue fugge.
L'amor, 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 l'amor,
e questa madrigale l'ho presa a prezzo, e questo è il destino fatale. L'amor che non ci dà mai tregue,
esso non vi dia mai l'uomo all'usine.
No,
ma infine perché v'apriti a me?
Master Ford as Fountain now proceeds to lay it on as thick as he can. His laudatory comments to Falstaff, delivered with proper military bearing, are followed here and there by quiet affirmations, see, see, and other such gestures of false humility from Falstaff himself. Ford sings, I'll tell you why I'm telling you this. Because you are a gentleman. You are bold, clever, eloquent. You are a warrior. You are a man of the world. Falstaff visibly swells as Mr. Ford speaks. Falstaff is almost speechless. He simply says, oh, and Mr. Ford, as Fountain continues, I'm not flattering you. And as for that sack of gold pieces, spend them, spend them. Yes, spend and squander my patrimony, all of it. Verdi's music reaches a huge climax on Ford's next line, the line calculated to create animal lust in Falstaff's groin, wherever that groin might now actually reside. Ford sings, I want you to be rich and happy. And now quietly, with the chirping of winds in the background, Ford sings, but in return, I ask that you seduce Alice. Okay, then. If he didn't have it before, Master Ford certainly has Falstaff's total attention now. All Falstaff can say is, what an incredibly strange request. Well, indeed it is. Ford provides an explanation, and his music traces a serpentine path to indicate that Master Fountain's own desire is for sin. He sings, Ford does. I'll explain. That cruel beauty has lived her life believing in chastity. Her self-righteous virtue dazzled me. Her unconquerable beauty would seem to say, and this next line is delivered in a falsetto voice, as if Alice herself were speaking,
Guai, se mi tocchi, woe to anyone who should touch me.
But if you can seduce her, then I will once again have reason for hope. After all, sin is born from sin. And then, well, what do you think? Falstaff can hardly believe it. This Mr. Fountain might be a little crazy, but he has brought with him wine and money and presented Falstaff with a classic two birds with one stone win-win proposition. Falstaff sings, First of all, without reservations, sir, I accept your little sack. And then, with a knight's honor, here's my hand. The deal is sealed as Falstaff and Mr. Ford as Fountain shake hands. With complete confidence and military bearing, Falstaff continues, I shall see that you get what you want. You shall possess Master Ford's wife. With all the enthusiasm he can muster, given, after all, that they're talking about his wife, Ford cries out,
Grazie! Thanks!
And now Falstaff tells Ford something Mr. Ford didn't know, something that hits poor Ford like a bolt of lightning. Falstaff sings, I'm already well on my way to accomplishing this mission. There's no reason why I shouldn't tell you. Within half an hour, she will be in my arms. Master Ford knows nothing of the women's plans, so this information comes as a terribly rude shock indeed. Breaking character entirely, he cries out, "Key, who will be in your arms?" Falstaff seems not to have noticed the fact that for a moment Ford's mask fell away and that he actually levitated when he sang the word, "Key, who?" Falstaff answers, "Alice. Earlier today, she sent a confidant to tell me that her boar of a husband is gone from the house d'alle deux alle tres from 2 until 3. In a strangled voice, Ford repeats, "From 2 until 3? Do you know this, Ford?" Falstaff launches into a devastating rant against this Master Ford, a man for whom he, Falstaff, cannot possibly have any respect. Corresponding to Shakespeare's hang him, poor cuckoldy knave, Boito's Falstaff twice utters the line, "I will cuckold him for you neatly, neatly," a line that once Falstaff exits will bounce around inside Ford's cranium like a hyperactive gerbil in a 6-by-6-inch box. But first, Falstaff's response to Ford's strangled question, "Do you know this, Ford?" Falstaff answers, "May the devil take him to hell, that boar, that boar. You'll see, you'll see, you'll see, you'll see, you'll see. I'll cuckold him neatly, neatly. And if he should disturb me, I'll club him on the horns on his head." The moaning we hear in the background is Ford's, who's writhing around as if he's got a kidney stone the size of a grapefruit. Falstaff takes Ford's reaction as an ongoing tribute to his own manhood, and so he continues to denounce this Master Ford in even more powerful words and voice. "Master Ford, he's an ox, just an ox. You'll see." Falstaff suddenly realizes that it's almost time for his rendezvous with Alice. He says to Ford, whose face has taken on an odd mottled green color, "Oh, goodness, but it's getting late. Wait for me here. I must make myself beautiful." And with that, Falstaff grabs the bag of gold pieces and exits, leaving Ford alone on stage, consumed with fear and loathing. Let us listen to the remainder of this fantastic duet from Ford's explanation to Falstaff, "Ve lo dirò, I'll tell you why I'm telling you this," through Falstaff's exit.
Ve lo dirò. Voi siete un gentiluomo.
Sì, sì, sì.
Prode, arguto, facondo.
Sì.
Voi siete un uomo di guerra. Voi siete un uomo di moda.
Oh.
Non vadura. E quello è un sacco di monete. Spendete, tutto il mio patrimonio, siate ricco e felice. Ma in contraccambio chiedo che conquistiate Alice.
Straina ingiunzione.
Mi spiego. Quella crudel beltà sempre vissuta in grande
la sua virtù importuna, ma barbagliava gli occhi, la bella inespugnabile dicea:
"Guai se mi tocchi." Ma se voi le spugnate, poi posso anch'io sperar. Da fallo nasce fallo, e allor che ve ne par?
Prima di tutto, senza complimenti, messeri,
accetto il sacco. Voi, Federico, cavaliere, qual la mano, fanno le vostre promesse. Voi, la moglie di for possederete.
Grazie.
Io son già molto innanzi, per ragioni io taccia con voi. A una mezz'ora sarà nelle mie braccia.
Chi?
Alice. Essa mandò dianzi una
confidente
per dirmi che quel tondero di suo marito è assente.
Dalle due alle tre.
Dalle due alle tre.
Lo conoscete.
Ah! Oh.
Il Dio se lo porca all'inferno, non me ne lo so favola. Quel tanghero, vedrai. Te lo fornifico netto. Se mi frastorna, gli sbarrona girandola, li botte sulle corna. Quel mese
sì.
È un due, un due. Vedrai, te lo corbel, vedrai. Te lo fornifico, netto. Quel tanghero. Me tardi.
Aspettami qua.
Vado a farmi bello.
Falstaff exits. He's off to his boudoir to freshen up and beautify himself. Ford remains on stage and he is stunned. The news regarding a rendezvous between his Alice and Sir John, the whale, Falstaff, was the very last thing he had expected to hear when he donned his disguise as Master Fountain and came here to make his call on Sir John. It takes Ford a few seconds just to find his voice. And when he does, he sings initially as if in a daze. Am I dreaming? Or is this real? Rolling drums portend well the explosion that's about to take place as Ford imagines himself wearing the horns of the cuckold. He sings, two enormous antlers are growing out of my skull. Am I dreaming? Master Ford, are you asleep? Wake up, hurry. Your wife is about to stray and in doing so dishonor you, your house, and worst of all, your bed. Oh, this last thought, your bed, really throws Ford into a tizzy, and he stands up on wobbly legs and staggers around a bit through the room until he finally sits down heavily. He ponders the enormity of the crime about to be committed against him, to say nothing for the enormity of the criminal himself. And as he contemplates that crime, a chorus of horns, corny, cuckoldo phones, breaks forth in the orchestra and continues in the background as he sings. They've set the time, they've planned their liaison, and you are mocked and tricked, and then everyone will say that there's no greater fool than a jealous husband. Oh, yes, already behind my back, they're whistling at me, calling me names, murmuring their contempt. Ford's outrage now comes fully to the surface as he contemplates the folly of marriage and the inherent untrustworthiness of women. Oh, marriage! An inferno! Oh, woman! The devil! Only idiots could possibly have faith in their wives! In a more measured tone, he now develops this issue of trust in women in a series of wonderful, if insulting, stereotypes. I would sooner entrust my beer to a German, all of my food to a gluttonous Dutchman, my bottle of brandy to a Turk, than entrust my wife to herself. Oh, evil fate! That terrible word keeps coming back to me. Horns! Ox! Billy goat! I am betrayed! Aye! Horns! Horns! And now, having worked through the stages of denial, anger, and contextualization, Ford can proceed to revenge. Shaking his fist, he sings, "You, Falstaff, you shall not escape me! No, you filthy man, you guilty bastard, you damned epicure! First, I'll let them couple, 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 then I'll catch them in the act. I'm exploding! I'm exploding!" Ford swears revenge. For a moment, this moment, he is as dramatic and as dangerous a person as we will meet in this opera. "I'll avenge this insult, and from the bottom of my heart, I shall praise forever my jealousy." Ford's aria, if we can rather inaccurately call it such, ends with a blistering, blazing, incredible, drop-dead, glorious orchestral postlude, Verdi at his raucous, dramatic best. And then the most wonderful thing happens. A long, descending horn line suddenly pokes fun at Ford and dissipates the energy, and a gentle, almost skipping little string theme ensues as Falstaff fetchingly re-enters, looking absolutely dapper in a fresh doublet that would be Versucci of Windsor, a feathered hat, Meldrake of Monza, and a cane from the Kelvin Clone Spring Accessories Collection. Falstaff's tripping, trilling entrance and its contrast with what immediately preceded it never fails to get a laugh out of the audience, a laugh honestly earned. Having entered, Falstaff fails to notice that Ford's eyes are glazed, that he's forgotten to swallow, and has suddenly acquired a little tic under his left eye. Falstaff says to him, "Here I am, all ready to go. Will you accompany me on my way?" Twitching, Ford cryptically replies, "I'll put you on your way." When they reach the door, each man insists that the other go first. Falstaff sings, "You first." Ford answers, "You first." Falstaff, "No, no, sono in casa mia. It's my house. You pass." Ford, "Prego, please." Falstaff, "It's getting late, and I do have a pressing appointment." Ford, "Don't stand on ceremony on my account." Falstaff, getting annoyed, "Passate, pass." Ford, getting more annoyed, "Prego, please." Falstaff, "Pass." Ford, "Please." Oh, this marvelous little episode at the door, and with it, the scene concludes with Falstaff and Ford deciding to walk out together, which allows them to sing together and, in doing so, bring this fantastic scene to its end together. Falstaff sings to Ford, "All right, let's walk out together." And Ford to Falstaff, "Let's walk out together." Finally, they exit, arm in arm, somehow squeezing through the door at the same time. Let's listen to Ford's incredible contemplation of cuckoldry, women, and revenge through the end of the scene from "E sogno o realtà?" Am I dreaming? Or is this real? To the triumphant music that brings down the curtain on this first scene of the second act.
E sogno o realtà? Due rami enormi crescono sulla mia testa e un sogno.
Mastro Ford, dormi, svegliati, su, ti resta, dormo gli scala e mette in male assetto, l'oro tuo, la tua casa e il tuo lar.
L'ora è fissata. Tramata l'inganno,
hai gabbato e truffato. E poi diranno che un marito geloso è un insensato. Già dietro me nomi di fame, coni e fischia passando, mormora lo scherno. Matrimonio inferno, donna demonio, nella l'armoglia abbiam fede i babbei. Affiderei la mia birra a un tedesco. Tutto il mio desco un olandese l'urca. La mia bottiglia d'acqua vita è un turco. Mia moglie se stessa ollai da sorte, quella brutta parola in cor mi torna, e torna. Bue, capron, le usa torte, ah, e torna, e torna. No, non mi sfuggirai, no, sazzo, reo, dannato epicureo. Prima li accoppio, e poi li colgo, li accoppio, li colgo, li accoppio, li colgo, li colgo, li colgo, li colgo, li accoppio. Io scoppio. Vendicherò.
Scene two. We set the scene. We are in a room in Ford's house. There is a wide window at the rear of the room, and there are four exits. A door at the right, a door at the left, and a third door at the right rear of the room that leads to the stairway, and another stairway at the left rear of the room. The wide window at the rear of the room is open, and through it, we can see the garden beyond it. Now, this is important. A folded room screen, you know, one of those portable accordion-like screens that often feature some sort of oriental design, is propped up against the left wall next to a huge fireplace. On the other side of the room, a wardrobe is set against the right wall. Additional furnishings consist of a little table, a wooden chest that doubles as a bench, an armchair, and some stools. On the armchair is a lute. On the table are some flowers, which marks this room as being a woman's room. The scene opens with a quiet, chipper, bouncing string melody in the orchestra. The strings capture perfectly the mood and the spirit of the women who are about to enter. They are quick-witted, light on their feet, and they are in excessively high spirits. Alice and Meg enter first, and Alice sings, "Let us present a bill in Parliament for a special tax on fat people." Mrs. Quickly, who has just returned from her interview with Falstaff, enters from the door on the right. Laughing, she responds to Alice, "Oh, big talker!" Alice and Meg, their questions falling one over the other, anxiously ask Mrs. Quickly, "How did it go? What happened?" And Mrs. Quickly answers, "We've got 'em." Alice is thrilled. She high-fives Mrs. Q and sings, "Brava! Good for you!" Mrs. Quickly, proud of her intrigue, continues, "His goose is cooked!" To which Alice and Meg sing, "Excellent!" Mrs. Quickly is about to run out of cliches. Now she sings, "He put his head right into the noose!" Please notice, when we listen, the wonderful way Verdi sets that last line, "He put his head right into the noose." Mrs. Quickly and the orchestra rather slowly descend into their lower range, and we can almost see Falstaff's great bulk straining downward against the noose. For our information, Verdi asks Mrs. Quickly to sing an E, six notes below middle C, which is pretty much the lowest pitch that you can ask any woman to sing who is not a former East German or Bulgarian female weightlifter to sing. Let's listen to the quick and engaging orchestral introduction, followed by Alice's opening words, "Presentaremo un bill," let us present a bill in Parliament.
Sulla gente grassa,
cuori
e per che c'è?
Sarà sconfitto.
Brava,
mi vale la maestà.
Bene,
io male la giacca ho finita.
Parlami tutto, resta, resta, resta.
Mrs. Quickly tells her story to Alice and Meg, beginning with a narrative description of her arrival at Falstaff's lair. She sings, "I arrived at the Garter Inn and asked to be admitted to the knight's presence as a secret messenger. Sir John condescended to grant me an audience. He received me with a pompous attitude." In a low voice, accompanied by four low, pompous-sounding French horns, Mrs. Quickly imitates Falstaff. "Good day, my good woman." And now she imitates herself, recalling her own words. "Your reverence." Then I bowed to him very obsequiously, and here Mrs. Quickly picks up the speed of her narrative, "and then I got down to the juicy news. He drank deeply my news and swallowed every drop of my story. To the point, he's convinced that both of you are madly in love with his, beautiful physical qualities." Mrs. Quickly turns to Alice and sings excitedly, "And he'll be here, presto, presto, soon, soon, to throw himself at your feet." This news takes Alice by surprise. She asks, "When?" And Mrs. Quickly answers, "Today, here, dalle due alle tre, between 2 and 3. Now, clearly, Mrs. Q got a little carried away in suggesting to Falstaff a time so very soon. Meg repeats it, "Between 2 and 3. And Alice, looking at her clock or sundial or whatever, shrieks a little shriek, "Son già le due! It's already 2 o'clock! And the women, one after the other, repeat and repeat, dalle due alle tre, between 2 and 3. We listen, starting with Mrs. Quickly's description of her interview with Falstaff, "Giunta all'albergo della Giardiniera." I arrived at the Garter Inn.
Giunta all'albergo della giarrettiera, chiedo d'essere ammessa alla presenza del cavalier segreta messaggera. Ser John si degna d'accordarmi udienza, ma coglietro anch'io in
Dalle due alle tre, between two and three. Alice knows she must move very quickly. She runs to the rear door and calls out to her servants. Yo, Ned! Yo, Will! Then she turns to Mrs. Quickly to assure her, I do believe I've got everything under control. She then shouts out the door again, Bring the big laundry hamper up here! Mrs. Quickly is really having a wonderful time, truly. She hasn't had this much fun since Mr. Quickly tripped and fell into a vat of mead, losing his last tooth in the process. Ha ha! She cries out, Oh, this will be a merry business. Meanwhile, Alice finally takes notice of her daughter, Anne, who's been moping around in the corner of the room since the scene began and has suddenly begun to weep. PMS? Bad grade on an algebra test? SATs coming up? What's the problem here? Alice sings to Anne. Anne? Why aren't you laughing? What's wrong? Why, you're crying. What's happened? Tell your mother. Anne responds pathetically. My father! Alice, in the style of all mothers, from the beginning of time, sings. Yes. Uh-huh. My father! Yes, dear. And then it all comes out, accompanied by a flood of tears. Anne sings. My father wants me to marry that awful Dr. Caius. This is news to Alice, she replies. To that old fogey? And one after the other, the women express their astonishment and rather low opinion of the good doctor. Mrs. Quickly, ay they. Meg, to that dolt? Alice, to that fool? Anne nods pathetically and cries, to that ancestor? All together, the women sing, No, 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 no. Still weeping, Anne sings, I'd rather be stoned alive. And Alice finishes her line for her, by a volley of cabbage stalks. Clearly, Alice is not going to permit her daughter to be married to Dr. Caius. The other women congratulate both mother and daughter, and Anne literally jumps for joy, singing, Eviva to life! I don't have to marry Dr. Caius! Now, the reason why this little domestic crisis had to occur here and now is that it was necessary to kill some stage time while two manservants, Ned and Will, carried in a huge hamper filled with laundry. Pointing, Alice says to them, Put it there, near the window. Now, remember, when I call you, you'll come back in and empty the hamper out the window and into the ditch under the window. What perhaps Alice should have said was, empty the hamper into the wet and slimy cesspit that is otherwise known as the River Thames that runs under the window, because that's what's really down there, my friends. This is Tudor England, after all. Meanwhile, her daughter Anne provides a little sound effect for emphasis. Boom! Kersplash! Alice hushes Anne and sends the servants away. But Anne's excitement over the plan and the fact that she doesn't have to marry Dr. Caius cannot be contained. Now she exclaims, Che bombardamento! What a bombardment it will be! And what a bombardment Verdi supplies in the orchestra to underscore and emphasize Anne's words. Let's listen from Alice's Hola, Ned, Will, Yo, Ned, Yo, Will, to Anne's Che bombardamento, what a bombardment it will be.
Sarà un affare gaio, la verità, e tu non ridi. Che cos'hai? Tu piangi? Che cos'hai? Ti porto male. Mio padre, mio padre, e me, mio padre vuole che io mi mariti al dottor Caio. A quel pettante, a quel gonzo, a quel gonzo.
Alice decides to do a little housekeeping in anticipation of Sir John's arrival. She sings, "Let's set the scene." She grabs a chair and puts it next to the table. A chair here. Anne puts the lute on the table and sings, "And my lute here." Alice turns and says to Anne and Meg, "Let's open the screen." Anne and Meg get the screen and unfold it, placing it between the hamper and the fireplace. Alice gives instructions to the ladies as they place the screen and then gives one of the greatest pre-game pep talks in all of the operatic repertoire. Alice sings, "Very good. Just like that. Open it a little more. Perfect." The comedy will begin in just a few minutes. Merry wives of Windsor, this is our hour. This hour to laugh ourselves hoarse. This sort of laughter that explodes, that ridicules, that flashes, that is armed with arrows and the lash. Merry wives, festive company, let smiles blossom on our faces and let the brilliant light of our laughter shine. Let our laughter be the spark that lights our joy in the air and joy in our hearts. The troops take their places. Mrs. Quickly, good soldier that she is, volunteers. "I'll stand watch." And Alice puts an exclamation mark on the preparations and sings, "And we'll show mankind that the fun of honest women is honest fun, out in the open." Mrs. Quickly goes to the window to keep watch while Alice, Anne, and Meg celebrate their sisterhood, singing, "Merry wives of Windsor, now's the time." Suddenly, Mrs. Quickly quietly shouts, "Eccolo, è lui!" There he is. He's coming! Alice is in charge. Pointing to the door on the left, she sings to Anne, "You, this way!" And pointing to the door on the right, she sings to Meg, "You, that way! To your places!" The women scurry about, singing, "To our places!" And to their places they go. We don't have time to listen to this portion of Act 2, Scene 2, but I would tell you that like so much of the opera, the lightning speed and comic timing of this episode really must be seen to be fully appreciated. Verdi's inner eye for stage movement and physical motion was really almost as extraordinary as his inner ear for music. So let's move on with the repeated understanding that we should all own some sort of a video of Verdi's Falstaff. When we return, Falstaff's arrival. Thank you.